This is VOA News. Reporting via remote, I'm Richard Green. After British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's announcement Thursday that he will resign, bookmakers in Britain are taking bets on who will be his successor. The AP's Ed Donahue reports.
William Kedjani with Star Sports has been outside number 10 Downing Street with a board with the current odds for prime minister. The favorite?
Defense Secretary Ben Wallace.
Kedjani considers Steve Baker, a supporter of Brexit, a major contender.
I say major contender, he's 10 to 1 now from 50 to 1. A big move for him.
Kedjani says chances are good for the two cabinet members in Britain who recently resigned.
Sajid Javid, first to resign, kicked all this off. Was previously the health secretary, had been chancellor before. Again, reasonably big runner, reasonably proper profile. Did he jump ship soon enough is the question to ask of both him and also Rishi Sunak.
Sunak was Boris Johnson's treasury chief. Bookmakers have been busy in Britain since signs started to appear that Boris Johnson was on his way out. I'm Ed Donahue.
U.S. soccer icon Megan Rapinoe paid silent tribute Thursday to fellow sports star Brittany Griner during the White House awards ceremony. As she and several others received the Presidential Medal of Freedom, Rapinoe wore a white pantsuit with the initials BG embroidered on the lapel. Hours earlier in a Moscow courtroom, Griner pleaded guilty to drug smuggling charges. The U.S. women's basketball star has been in prison in Russia since February for bringing vape cartridges with cannabis oil into the country. She insisted that she did not intend to break the law. White House spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre said U.S. President Joe Biden is going to do everything he can to make sure she gets home safely. She spoke in response to criticism from Griner's family that the Biden administration has not done enough to help her. This is VOA News. The Minnesota police officer convicted of killing George Floyd in 2020 has been sentenced for violating Floyd's civil rights. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports.
Federal Judge Paul Magnuson sentenced Derek Chauvin to 21 years in prison for violating George Floyd's civil rights. Magnuson told the former officer that what he did was simply wrong and offensive. Chauvin pinned Floyd to the pavement outside a Minneapolis corner store for more than 9 minutes as he lay dying. Magnuson, who presided over the federal trial and convictions of three other officers at the scene, blamed Chauvin alone for what happened. Chauvin was by far the senior officer on the scene. He will serve the federal sentence at the same time he serves his 22-and-one-half-year sentence on state charges of murder and manslaughter. I'm Norman Hall.
The lone abortion clinic in the southern U.S. state of Mississippi is seeking a legal path to reopen in the face of a state law that mostly bans the procedure. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
They are defeated. Put your foot on their neck.
Although Mississippi's only abortion clinic closed its doors Wednesday on the eve of a state law taking effect that bans most abortions, pro-life and pro-choice protesters faced off outside the facility Thursday. At the same time, lawyers for Jackson Women's Health Organization asked the state Supreme Court to block the new law that was triggered by the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in late June that overturned Roe v. Wade. The attorneys for the clinic argue that in 1988, the Mississippi Supreme Court ruled the state constitution has a right to privacy that includes abortion. A state judge rejected the same argument Tuesday. I'm Mike Gracia.
The European Parliament has passed a resolution in response to the overturning of the landmark 1973 case Roe v. Wade that legalized abortion in the United States. VOA's Marissa Melton has more.
The European Union's Parliament on Thursday overwhelmingly condemned the end of constitutional protections for abortion in the United States and called for such safeguards to be enshrined in the EU's Fundamental Rights Charter. Lawmakers adopted the resolution in a vote of 324 to 155. There were 38 abstentions. National laws determine the status of abortion in individual EU countries. It is legal and practiced without much political opposition in many member nations, but it's banned in Malta and it's increasingly restricted in Poland. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Recapping our top story, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson resigned on Thursday, and now British bookmakers are taking bets on who his successor might be. You can find more on this stories and all the stories we're covering. Visit us at voanews.com. Reporting via remote, I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
Today is Friday, July 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, key U.S. senators seek to designate Russia as a sponsor of terrorism for invading Ukraine.
When we get back, we're going to try to get the Senate pass the resolution, hopefully leading the way for the administration to label Russia as a state sponsor of terrorism in the category of Iran, Syria, and North Korea.
The search is on for a new British Tory party leader and prime minister as Boris Johnson resigns.
Boris Johnson has resigned. He will be leaving as leader of the Tory party as prime minister. But as it stands, he says he wants to wait until October. That's the key Conservative Party conference.
And Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed vows to defeat the Oromo Liberation Army. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Two U.S. senators visiting Ukraine said on Thursday that Russia should be designated as the state sponsor of terrorism. Republican Lindsey Graham and Democrat Richard Blumenthal said Ukraine, in their words, is the hope of democracy, unquote. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky met with Graham and Blumenthal and asked for modern air defense systems to secure Ukraine's skies. This as Russian President Vladimir Putin warned Kyiv that it should quickly accept Moscow's terms or prepare for the worst, adding that Russia has barely started its action. Speaking Thursday at a meeting with leaders of the Kremlin-controlled parliament, Putin accused Western allies of fueling the hostilities, charging that, quote, the West wants to fight us until the last Ukrainian, unquote. NATO and Washington have denied the charges. Ukrainian refugees have spread across Europe and the world since Russia invaded their homeland in February, though Polish officials estimate that half of them have stayed in Poland. But as Greg Fleckers reports from the Polish border town of Medka, many are choosing to stay close to make sure and quick across the border and return home for good when the time comes.
Ukrainians have been coming to Poland for decades to work and study, so it's a natural destination for refugees from the war. 18-year-old Julia is one recent arrival.
I want to study in Poland. And to maybe make study and job to earn money. We must help our parents in Ukraine.
She's learning Polish, but she plans to return to Ukraine as soon as the war ends.
Because it's our country, it's our home, and we want to return.
But danger stops many from returning. After fleeing a war zone in eastern Ukraine, Sophie embraces life in Poland.
I'm so like Polish. I even have like Polish, my favorite. Yeah, I so like Polish guy because they really understand us. They really try to help us.
According to the United Nations, close to 7 million refugees left Ukraine in the first weeks of the war. More than 2 million have returned to their homeland. 4 million Ukrainians fled to Poland, and more than 2 million are still here. While some refugees welcome the chance to live in prosperous Western European nations, many ignore offers of free transportation to those more distant lands, according to Agnieszka Kosiewicz of the Polish Migration Forum, an NGO that promotes the rights of migrants.
Right now we do have trains and buses that leave to those countries empty or half empty because there is no interest to move on among the refugees.
Similarities in language and culture attract Ukrainians to Poland, but Kosiewicz says proximity to their homeland is most important. The drive back to their land was especially strong during the spring planting season, says Kosiewicz.
And a lot of people need to plant things in the gardens in order to have crops. We also see people going for visits to see whether their house is still there or in what shape is the farm.
Even some Ukrainians whose homes are not currently in active combat zones have chosen to stay in Poland, hoping that maybe soon they'll be able to return to their neglected gardens and fields. Greg Flakis for VOA News, Medica, Poland.
Turkish authorities have detained a Russian ship which Kyiv claims is carrying stolen grain. The move comes as Turkey faces new scrutiny by those who accuse it of undermining Western sanctions against Russia. Doria Jones reports from Istanbul.
Since Sunday, Turkish authorities have detained a Russian-flagged cargo ship after Kyiv accused it of carrying stolen grain. The ship's cargo is being investigated near the Turkish Black Sea port of Karasu, close to Istanbul's Bosphorus waterway, the gateway to world markets. Analysts see the detention as an important gesture to Ukraine. Hussein Barja is with the Foreign Policy Institute, a research organization.
Ukraine is still an independent state, in war but independent, and their claim of the Turkish government to control these ships is the right one, and Turkey acted according to this, because there is an accusation or an application that Turkey should stop this, which is illegal, as the Ukrainian government claims.
Last month, Ukraine's ambassador to Turkey, Vasil Bodnar, accused Turkish companies of buying stolen Ukrainian grain. A Turkish cargo ship recently left a Russian-occupied Ukrainian port after negotiations with Moscow. It's unclear if it was carrying grain, but international media continue to report grain from Russian-occupied Ukraine is being imported by Turkey. Ankara vehemently denies the accusation. Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Çavuşoğlu. Çavuşoğlu said, "We are taking all claims seriously and investigating it in a very serious way and share the outcome with the Ukrainian side all the time." Ankara is refusing to enforce Western sanctions against Russia. In a bid to bring more Russian tourists, whom Turkey relies heavily on, Turkish banks join Russia's Mir payment system, which Moscow is using to circumvent a ban on international credit cards. Such moves are adding to broader concerns over Turkey's role in financial sanction busting. Timothy Ash is with Blue Bay Asset Management.
The Turks kind of think, well, you know, we can't afford to join the sanctions regime. And I've heard from various government officials that they potentially see this as an opportunity to make money, actually. They argue that, you know, like the Iran sanctions, you know, brokering sanctions can see Turkey win important foreign exchange earnings. And I think there's nervousness about that in the West.
U.S. Deputy Treasury Secretary Wally Adeyemo visited Ankara in June for talks on enforcing Russian sanctions. Analysts warn Turkey could be vulnerable to secondary sanctions by Washington. But Ankara says enforcing sanctions would jeopardize its mediation efforts between Kyiv and Moscow. Asla Aydintashbash of the European Council on Foreign Relations.
There is an acceptance among Western allies that Turkey is involved in this balancing act, that it's not going to cut off relations with Russia, that it is going to do this strategic balancing between Russia and the West. And because Turkey is geopolitically so important at the Black Sea, with the Turkish Straits, there is a tolerance.
President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has said he would hold talks with Ukraine and Russian leaders to free trapped Ukrainian grain as world food prices continue to soar. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
The search is on for a new leader of Britain's Conservative Tory Party and Prime Minister. This after scandal-ridden Boris Johnson announced on Thursday he would quit the job after dramatically losing the support of his ministers and most of the lawmakers. More than 50 ministers resigned. Isolated and powerless, Johnson said it was clear his party wanted someone else in charge. For more on the evolving political drama, I spoke with VOA's Europe correspondent, Henry Ridgewell.
There is going to be a search for a new leader. It's just not clear how quickly that process is going to take place. Boris Johnson has resigned. He will be leaving as leader of the Tory party as prime minister. But as it stands, he says he wants to wait until October. That's the key Conservative Party conference. And for the new leader, the new prime minister, to be installed by then. And in the meantime, he wants to carry on governing throughout the summer. He has already identified a new cabinet of ministers, and he says he wants to get on with the job until then. The trouble is, most of his MPs and many of the ministers who previously supported him, and certainly all of the opposition in Parliament, don't want him to carry on.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson is reputed to be a cat with nine lives. With what has happened, did he jump or was he pushed in taking this decision?
He was very much pushed in taking this decision to resign. Boris Johnson has wanted to be Prime Minister pretty much his whole life. He's made that clear. It started with his education in Eton and then his university days in Oxford. He was groomed for the job and he spent his political life really angling towards it. And so it was with great reluctance that he announced his resignation today. The pressure on him has been growing really for several months and he has resisted that. Several of the incidents and the accusations that have been made against Boris Johnson would have felled previous prime ministers. Accusations of breaching the constitution by proroguing parliament. Accusations of having parties in Downing Street during the lockdown. Criminal conviction for doing so. And the latest allegations of overlooking accusations of sexual molestation by one of his own deputy chief whips. These would have been problems that would have forced other prime ministers to resign a long time ago. He has held on by his fingernails, and it was only with the withdrawal of support of so many ministers today, numbering in the dozens, that he was forced to resign.
What is in the future for the prime minister? I mean, he has held a top job. If he steps down, as he said he will, what's next for him?
It's difficult to see a character like Boris Johnson going quietly to the back benches of Parliament and living out a quiet life without any limelight and without any controversy. I think he will consider a role possibly outside of politics. He's had brief careers in journalism, in television presenting. One could perhaps see him doing that. But it's also possible that he may see a route towards resurrection in politics, if you like. It's a very unpredictable world in Britain at the moment. Political parties are splintering. So I think he may oversee this process of installing a new prime minister, sit back and see what happens, and then take a decision in the coming months and years as to whether he may see a route to a political comeback. But at the moment, looking at the opinion polls, looking at his opinion within the Conservative Party itself, the drip of allegations of lying and impropriety have had a very deep impact on how he is viewed throughout the country and his own party. So at the moment, it's difficult to see a way back for him in politics.
That's VOA Europe correspondent Henry Ridgeworth speaking with me from London. Scotland's First Minister Nicola Sturgeon, who is seeking approval for another referendum vote on Scotland's independence on Thursday, said Boris Johnson should not be allowed to stay on as a caretaker prime minister after tendering his resignation. Sturgeon said a general election would be the country's best interest, but did not foresee the ruling Conservative Party calling an early vote.
I think first and foremost there will be an overwhelming and very widespread sense of relief today that Boris Johnson's time as Prime Minister, which should probably never have been allowed to happen in the first place, is coming to an end. I do think it is quite incredible, though, to suggest that he will remain as Prime Minister for another 3 to 4 months. I think the sooner he is out of Number 10, and preferably that is today, the better.
That's Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon. The White House said on Thursday it will continue to closely cooperate with the government of the United Kingdom after Boris Johnson announced his resignation. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said the United States and Britain will continue to work together on a range of issues, including, in her words, to continue to support Ukraine in their effort to defend our democracy against Putin's brutal war. In other news, China is calling the United States, quote, the biggest threat to world peace, stability and development, unquote, continuing its sharp rhetoric in response to U.S. accusations of Chinese spying and threats to the international order. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhao Liang's comments Thursday came a day after the head of the FBI and leader of Britain's domestic intelligence agency raised fresh alarms about the Chinese government. They warned business leaders that Beijing is determined to steal their technology for competitive gain. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Gene Rolfo in Washington. A UN investigator warns violence will increase and national reconciliation in the Central African Republic will remain elusive as long as the country has persistent corruption and impunity. The expert's report was submitted to the UN Human Rights Council on Wednesday, and Lisa Schneider reports for VOA from Geneva.
The independent expert on the situation of human rights in the Central African Republic presented his last report to the Council in March. Since then, Yao Agbetse says MINUSCA, the UN peacekeeping mission in the CAR, has documented 436 incidents of extremely grave human rights violations against more than 1,300 victims. They include conflict-related sexual violence and grave violations of the rights of children. Agbetse says nearly half of the violations were committed by state agents and their allies, the other half by armed groups that had signed the 2018 peace agreement aimed at ending the civil war that broke out in 2013. Unfortunately, he says, gross violations continue to be committed with impunity. He speaks through an interpreter.
If the current situation persists, the Central African Republic we'll see an increase in tension and social tension, which may lead to an even more fragile situation in the conflict areas. And the instability will give a new impetus to the armed groups who will take up their belligerent activities in violation of human rights and international humanitarian law.
That, he says, will prompt people to flee to other countries in the region and toward Europe. Agbetse calls combating impunity a priority. He says the population wants the state to investigate allegations of human rights and to start impartial investigations of human rights abuse with the support of the Human Rights Division of MINUSCA. He speaks through an interpreter.
Moreover, it's important that the government follow up on the conclusions of the investigations conducted by its special Commission of Inquiry, established in May 2021, into the allegations of atrocities committed by FACA and their Russian allies. The trials of the perpetrators of these violations and other serious violations must be started with no delay.
FACA stands for the Central African Armed Forces. The independent expert is referring to allegations of violations committed by Russian mercenaries associated with the private security company, the Wagner Group. They reportedly have been abusing and killing civilians in the CAR since 2019. The United Nations, several governments, and human rights groups accused the Russian mercenaries of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Both Russia and the CAR have repeatedly denied that the Wagner Group is in the country. In his response to the report, the CAR's Minister of Justice, Arnaud Joubert-Abazene, made no reference to the Wagner Group. However, he told the Council the promotion of human rights and combating impunity and sexual and gender-based violence is at the heart of the government's priorities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has vowed to defeat the Oromo Liberation Army, an insurgent group he's blaming for two massacres in the past 3 weeks. Fred Harter has more from Addis Ababa.
Addressing Parliament Thursday, Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed condemned two recent massacres targeting members of the Amhara ethnic group as inhumane acts of violence carried out by evil forces. The most recent massacre took place on Monday in the West Welliga zone of Ethiopia's Oromia region, resulting in an unknown number of deaths. Those killings followed a separate incident last month in which armed men killed 338 Amhara villagers, according to official government figures. Ethiopia's government blames the Oromo Liberation Army, or OLA, for the killings. The insurgent group claims to be fighting for greater autonomy for the Oromo people, Ethiopia's largest ethnic group, but it has been accused of a spate of bloody human rights abuses. Speaking to lawmakers on Thursday, Abiy pledged to eliminate the OLA. He also made a rare admission of losses on the government side, saying that police officers and soldiers have been dying on a daily basis battling the insurgent group. He added that warada, or district officials, have also been assassinated. Hear his words spoken by an interpreter from Ethiopia's state broadcaster.
In Wolega, hundreds of reports have been given to you. Hundreds of warada leaders have been killed. It's not as easy as speaking in this forum. People dying in discharge of their duties.
Abiy's address came a day after Ethiopia's parliament held a moment of silence for the victims of the massacres and set up a committee to investigate. Phone service to the area is down, making it difficult to verify the number of people killed in Monday's violence, which has fueled rising discontent among ethnic Amhara. Fred Harter for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Thank you, Fred, and to all our VOA listeners, please note we have moved our programs to a new website, voaafrica.com, from voanews.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com, and thanks for listening. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com. Until next time, I am Chinua from Washington. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned by the June 14th mass conviction of some 60 opposition activists in Cambodia, including Cambodian-American lawyer Thierry Seng. The sentencing of these opposition activists, many of whom are associated with the disbanded Cambodia National Rescue Party, is the latest instance in an alarming pattern of threats, intimidation, and persecution of opposition political leaders and parties. Convicted of treason, Thierry Seng was sentenced to 6 years in prison. The others received sentences of 5 to 8 years. Thierry Seng told reporters she was ready for a sham guilty verdict. "I am ready and prepared to go to the notorious Cambodian prison for my political opinions, for my beliefs, for my belief in democracy, for my belief in freedom," she said. "I am ready to pay the price of prison in order that I live out my conscience and my belief in freedom and justice." U.S. Ambassador to Cambodia Patrick Murphy tweeted out, "We are deeply troubled by the verdict against Thierry Seng. Freedom of expression and association and tolerance of dissenting views are vital components of democracy. We call on Cambodian authorities to release her and other human rights activists from unjust imprisonment." Prime Minister Hun Sen has ruled Cambodia for 37 years, rising to prominence in the 1980s after the defeat of the Khmer Rouge regime. The Cambodia National Rescue Party was Hun Sen's biggest political rival before it was disbanded by a court ruling prior to national elections in 2018 that led to victory for Hun Sen's Cambodia People's Party. Thierry Seng and most of the other defendants were charged over a failed attempt by the leader of the Cambodia National Rescue Party to return from exile in 2019. All Cambodians should be able to exercise their human rights, to express their views freely, to assemble peacefully, and to choose their leaders, said State Department spokesperson Ned Price. "We call on Cambodian authorities to release all those unjustly detained, including Thierry Seng, and protect freedoms of expression, association, and peaceful assembly, consistent with Cambodia's constitution and its international obligations and commitments. The United States stands with the Cambodian people and remains steadfast in support of their aspirations for democracy and human rights."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.